Good evening and welcome again to another edition of Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Sko. I'm Tim Turner, along with co-host Roscoe Dance. We think we'll have for you tonight a really engaging program. We have the NFL draft just ended, and it was loaded with surprises in the first round. I know I was with my team picked. We'll look back at that and who went where. But right now, the biggest thing that's right in front of us is the NBA playoffs. We're into the second round. A lot of great series are going on. You got Milwaukee is finding out Boston was no pushover, but then the Celtics came back. I mean, then the Bucks came back last night and had a magnificent game. Toronto and Philly, they tied at one. Golden State is two up on Houston, where the officiating took game one. That was the storyline, but in game two, it was just great basketball. And then you know, Portland and Denver have only played one game, and I think they play again tonight at 9 Eastern, where Denver got out the gate really quickly. So we're looking forward to talking NBA basketball tonight, and we will have with us as our guest tonight a man who is intimately informed on the NBA. Detroit Pistons head coach Dwayne Casey will be with us for this show, and we want to get his take on the playoffs and just on the past NBA season and just what's going on. Roscoe, how are you doing this evening, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great. A little bleary-eyed still from staying up catching those late games recently, especially last night, watching Golden State do their thing with Houston. That was a real interesting game. Didn't quite go like a lot of people expected that it would in terms of the way that it was played and officiated, but it was an interesting game nonetheless, and a competitive game, exciting game. A lot of things going on in that game as well.
Well, I think on all the series, there's a lot going on. You get this back and forth. I mean, after game one, it looked like Philly was cooked with Kawhi and getting up with 45, and then they were able to come back and regain some equilibrium, and then it looked like, you know, Milwaukee and Boston, was going to be the toughest of the series, and it's turning out to be that way with both of them scoring pretty big wins. I'm really interested in seeing what Portland and Denver is. I'm more so maybe the end of the Denver San Antonio series. The last 36 seconds just blew me away. I was mystified as to why San Antonio played it the way they did. I understand later on that Pop tried to get them to call timeout and nobody could hear him. That was a weird way to end your season. It seems like it went out with a whimper there. But we'll talk about all of that and more, because I think we have with us right now the head coach of the Detroit Pistons, Dwayne Casey. Dwayne, you there with us?
I'm right here, buddy. How you guys doing?
Hey, great. Dwayne, how are you?
You're doing great, Roscoe. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Glad to have you on.
Yeah. We're glad to be here.
Yep. And you know, right off the top, I want to congratulate you on a fabulous season, you know, with the Pistons in your first year. They're getting them into the playoffs, albeit the eighth seed, and you didn't fare as well as you would like to have. Right. But still, that's quite an accomplishment to get to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Where I think some people didn't give you a shot at even doing that. So, stellar job.
Well, I appreciate that, Roscoe. I think, you know, going into the season, everybody had us, you know, ninth, tenth, somewhere in there as far as making the playoffs. And in a storied program like here in Detroit, it had three championships and some great teams, the Bad Boys. And the fans here, they've only had two playoff appearances in the last 10 years. So, you know, getting to the playoffs was a goal of ours. And the problem this year was our reward was Milwaukee, probably the hottest team in basketball right now. So it wasn't a good matchup, especially, you know, injuries are part of the NBA and it's not an excuse, but our best player in Blake Griffin went down. We were in sixth place. We was trying to avoid Milwaukee. So I think any other matchups, I think we were 3-0 against Toronto and 1-3, I think it was 1-2 against Philadelphia. So we had a better record against those two teams in the regular season. So if we could have avoided Milwaukee right off the bat, we'd have had a better chance. But, you know, Blake going down toward the end, and, you know, he had surgery the day after we were finished to clean out his knee and everything. So that kind of put us behind the eight ball, but I thought our guys grew and got better. We had two guys who had career years, and Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin both had career seasons. And for Blake to have a career year after a great, you know, career he had with the Clippers was great for us. And so we're looking forward to big things with guys continuing to get better, continue to grow. I enjoy developing players. Our coaching staff did an excellent job of developing our guys and then getting them ready and growing. And you know, so the, and I think that's what we're here for, is to make sure guys continue to get better and be successful in what they do.
Well, let me ask you about developing players. I know that was one of the key things that you did with Toronto. What is the key, the secret to player development? You seem to have found it, whatever it is.
I think one thing you have to do, Roscoe, is find out, you know, what makes a young man click in that situation and stay with it. You know, make sure you let him know that, you know, his future, his future is our future, and the better he gets, the better we're going to be as a team. And, you know, I see guys like Rashard Lewis back in Seattle, who I worked with, and I see guys now like Pascal Siakam and the success we had. I remember his first year in the league, I think he started for me like 19 games and really just was a ball of energy. But you could just see his skill set was going to be there, and the young man worked. He worked out in L.A. the entire summer, so I'd shoot out there to watch him work out in the mornings. He'd play in the afternoons, lift at night, and it's paying off for him now. You know, unfortunately, I'm not there to enjoy, but I'm so proud of him, the way he's worked. A late first-round pick, but you just see how, you know, we'd send him down to the G League and he wouldn't complain, wouldn't be upset about anything, but just went down there and worked his behind off, came back in the afternoon or came back that night and was with the varsity team in Toronto, but just continue to work with a great attitude. And, you know, I enjoy that. I enjoy, you know, mapping out a program for the young man. We're doing the same thing here in Detroit for our young players, Bruce Brown and Kyrie Thomas and Luke Kennard. And you know, it's going to be fun to watch those young men develop. But the number one thing you ask, Roscoe, is work. There's nothing that replaces work. There's no substitute for it. You know, but getting the guys to understand there's a reward at the end of the rainbow for that hard work. And, you know, I can just show them the track record, the young man DeMar DeRozan, how he grew and developed and was rewarded handsomely, you know, and the league does that. If you work hard, develop yourself, help your team win, you know, and that's the bottom line. If you develop and get better, you help your team win, you get rewarded.
Well, that was the thing with Drummond. You'd heard before, or maybe there was rumblings that Drummond wasn't a hard worker, but you seemed to make it work between he and Griffin.
Right.
It seemed like there was talk, these, like, you know, there weren't enough basketballs for both of those guys to coexist, but you made it work.
No, and that's the thing about it, and that's so unfair for, you know, big guys develop later. I mean, Andre just turned 25 years old. And the rap he had and the rap he has is he doesn't work hard, like you said, that he's lazy, and that's so far from the truth. Andre's the last guy to leave the gym. You know, he worked his behind off all last summer down in Miami and, you know, just dedicated himself. I threw him a carrot early in the season talking about, you know, let's work on the three ball. If you give me defense and give me rebounding on that end, you know, you can go out there and shoot the three. Yeah, well, it's a point in his career he's not ready for that. He's not ready for the three-point shot, but he did do a great job of rebounding. I allowed him to bring the ball down the floor and initiate our offense on the break, which is a huge step for him. At his size and his quickness, though, he has the ability to bring the ball down the floor and DHO to the shooters. So, you know, making sure he's involved, making sure we put him in a position to be successful, and really, really accentuate his strength, which is his rebounding. He's one of the best rebounders I've ever been around, and it showed this year, and he did an excellent job of protecting the paint for us. He's probably got the quickest feet on our team. But, you know, and again, Andre's one of those young men that really, really, you know, if he knows that you care about him, that if he knows that you have his best interests at heart, he'll run through a wall for you. And, you know, is he a finished product? No. Did he have some games where he didn't play well? Yes, all players do in the NBA. But The bottom line is the future is going to be great for Andre. He's going to continue to grow. We're going to continue to push him, work with him, and develop his skill set, because he's got a lot of skills, and right now he's just scratching the surface of where he can go.
Well, Dwayne, two things. With guys being so young coming into the league, it's become more and more about developing those skills than it used to be. And the other thing is that a lot of guys come into the league and they don't know what it is to work hard. They think
that's
that they
true.
Are, but
right.
they really don't understand what hard work is.
That's so true, Roscoe, and that's the major thing. You know, it's a huge difference, and I always said it, between, because I coached at Kentucky, I coached in college basketball, so I know what guys, they thought they were working hard and the level that we were working at in college versus what it's about at this level is like day and night. And first of all, you're going against men. In college, you're going against young men, you're the same age, but here you're going against 33-year-olds, you're putting 18-year-olds against 33-year-olds, 30-year-old men, who are working for, you know, a house payment, they're working for the kids, you know, they're out there with a purpose. And here you are, snotty-nosed 18-year-old coming in the league thinking that you have all the answers. And those grown men are saying, okay, young fella, come on in here, you know. And then just overall physical strength, you know, overall old man strength versus young boy strength. It's a total different game from that level, how hard you have to work, the conditioning level that you have to be at to play in the NBA and to be successful in the NBA, it's like day and night. So just getting over that hump is a huge hurdle for a lot of young players, and some never get over it. But the ones that come in and dedicate themselves and give themselves to the coaches, the coaching staff, listen to the older players that are on their team, those are the ones who make it.
Right, right. Well, let's segue into the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. You know, it's really an interesting start there with back and forth. How do you see that shaking out?
With Philadelphia and Toronto?
Philadelphia, Toronto, and Milwaukee, Boston.
Well, you know, first of all, Philadelphia and Toronto is a great series in the fact that you've got two excellent teams, two big physical teams. Philadelphia is a big physical team with their starting lineup, and Toronto's their starting team is a big physical, athletic, defensive-minded team. You got two defensive player of the year in Kawhi Leonard and Mark Gasol, who really are veteran players, smart. You got Danny Green, who's won an NBA championship at San Antonio. So you've got the makings there of an excellent, excellent defensive team. And on the other side, you've got Joel Embiid, who's probably one of the most dominant big men in our game right now as far as someone trying to guard him one-on-one. Once he gets going and going downhill toward the basket, it's almost impossible. So their size, you have Ben Simmons, who's, 6'10", as a point guard, and handles the ball. And, you know, you got his size and athleticism, and Tobias Harris, who's got great size, and Jimmy Butler is a man child. So, you know, you got two physical teams well matched. Philadelphia is a tough place to play in their arena with their fans. So it's going to be an exciting series. I wasn't surprised that they came back the other night. I just knew that Philadelphia was a better team than they showed in Game One. They just came out and put their stamp on the game and didn't let their foot up as the game went on in Game Two. In the other game, Milwaukee, I think Milwaukee's probably the best team in the Eastern Conference all around. A well-rounded team with Antetokounmpo anchoring it. He's probably at his size, probably the hardest guy to guard because he's so long. I mean, he's got the Euro step going to the rim, and when he stretches out, he can go from way inside the free throw line and to the rim in one step almost. So impossible to guard. And then now last night he goes out and shoots the three ball, and when he starts knocking that down, it's almost impossible to guard him. And so their team, I think, is going to be, you know, I think they were out of their – rhythm in Game One, and they came back last night and played like the Milwaukee team they've been all year.
Well, you mentioned that Euro step. And I was going, thinking, I'm like, that dude has to walk every time. It's not like a James Harden 27
uh-huh.
steps when he does a step back three, but my gosh, he covers a lot of ground.
No question. He does. I mean, he once he stretches out, and then not only with his stride, but then his length, his arm length, when he reaches out to the basket, he's right there dunking, and that's why he kind of surprises guys when he does that. But I thought in game one, Boston did an excellent job of really sliding east and west, east to west with his Euro step, and he really didn't get an angle, where we didn't do a good job in our series of once he started Euro step and he stepped around us and laid it up or dunked it. So when you have him coming at you, you got to be down and ready to engage his speed as he's coming at you and be ready to slide east and west and cut him off. And preferably have two bodies there instead of one. So, you know, that's what Boston did a good job in game one doing that, and game two they did not.
Well, the Philly-Toronto series, Kawhi Leonard, I mean, I knew that he was a good player, but like he's even better and doing more things now than he did when he was in San Antonio, that he's expanded his game. And, I mean, he really looks to be unstoppable and can, you know, get what he wants when he wants it. How do you deal with him?
Well, the thing about it, I think in game two, I think Philly did a good job of double teaming him. They went from with Embiid, or the closest big was coming to double team him to get the ball out of his hands. And hell, he still had 35 points. So,
right.
But I thought they broke his rhythm a little bit and slowed him down as much as you can. And but when you commit two to the ball like that, that means somebody else is open. So, you know, Toronto, you know, they started in the second half doing a better job of moving the basketball and finding the open man. And against that, you got to be able to knock down shots and be ready to knock down shots. But Kawhi, the offense is built around him. I don't know how much it was built around him in San Antonio, but he's fresh. He had the load management where he only played, 60 games or whatever it was. And so he's fresh and ready to go. And right now he's playing at a very, very high level physically, mentally. It seems like every shot he's putting up is going in. And so he's a handful. And I'm sure they'll be prepared to attack the double team and try to make sure they make them pay for double team. But I know Philly, you know, they'll mix it up. I think they'll play him straight up some, and they'll double team him some and try to keep him off balance. But that's probably the only way you're going to slow him down. And I think once he does get going, I think plan B is you just can't let, you know, Kyle start getting going and Gasol get going and Siakam, the other three guns get going at the same time as Leonard is going.
Well, who do you see coming out of the West? You've got Milwaukee looking very strong in the East. Is it just a foregone conclusion with Golden State being 2-0 against the Rockets? Because you think that would be the battle for who the real team is coming out of the West. But what's your take on that?
Well, the thing about it is, you know, really what has Golden State done? They've done what they're supposed to do. They took care of home. And the old saying, the playoffs doesn't start till the other team wins on the other team's court. So Houston just had, you know, even though they didn't play very well, the games were still winnable. I mean, it wasn't like they got blown out of the park or anything like that. So I think Houston going back home would get a better gauge on making shots and making plays and that type of thing. And again, Golden State, I think, still is the best team in the West. Until somebody dethrones them, you still have to go with the champs. They have just so many weapons. They've played so many, you know, games together. Their continuity is there. They kind of know what each other is going to do before they do it. You know, that type of company knowledge and corporate knowledge that they have with each other is just unbelievable, and it's just so hard to overcome, and especially under pressure. You know, there's so many things we say we'll do in a game, and you tell players, you think a player knows what to do during the meat of the game, but once they get under pressure of a playoff game, and that's what the uncertainty. And Golden State has played so many times together, and so has Houston, but probably not as much together games together as Golden State. So, but I think Houston will bounce back at home and do a better job at home. You know, they're just not going to forget how to score. And so I think getting back to Houston will help them tremendously.
Well, a lot was made going into last night's game about the officiating and, you know, the non-calls on the three-point attempts and defenders stepping under Harden. Well, now, what is your feeling about that that scenario and how that is officiated?
Well, I think it's tough because, you know, first of all, we have the best officials in the world and coaching overseas, coaching over in Japan, and you know, seeing some of that officiating with the guys, we have great officials. But what happens is now in the NBA, our NBA players are very intelligent. They're going to do what the game gives. They're going to take what the game gives them, what the rules give them. And, you know, you have to be almost perfect to read some of the flopping actions that the players are giving or doing. And with a little contact, a player knows how to sell it. And so officials not only do have to officiate the game, they have to officiate some of the acts that are going on in our game. And it's nothing new. It's been going on all year, and it's accentuated now with the playoffs. But the landing call, it should be automatic almost because so many players have turned ankles and hurt themselves. I know I had DeMar DeRozan was out multiple games because he jumped up and the guy, you know, sticks his foot under there. So I've lost players before in the past with that. So I, as a coach, you know, for the health and safety of your players, you want that call to be almost automatic. And, you know, but again, if an official feels like a player is trying to trick him or fool him, you know, they'll lay off of it. But, you know, again, it's a hard game, and I thought both teams in game two with Golden State and Houston did a good job of just playing basketball. I mean, they didn't stay on the officials. They stayed off the officials. And I think if that happens, you know, our officials in the NBA will make the right decision. You know, I would say 98% of the time they're going to miss calls. They're human, and but again, I think it's both ways. But you know, my thing to my players all this year was, you know, next play mentality. I haven't seen an official yet change his call because you got upset or threw a hissy fit or whatever. And you know, so play the game. They're going to make mistakes. You make mistakes. I make mistakes. And that's what makes our game so great. Is even with that, we still have a great game.
But, you know, from the way I see it with Harden, practically on every shot he takes, especially the three-pointer, he either jumps forward or he sticks his foot out.
Well, that's, you know, still he still has a right to land. I mean, that's the key thing with that. And you know, that's the hard thing. Is he coming forward? Is he jumping into the defense or is defense going from point A to point C to challenge his shot? And once you leave the floor as a defender – and you're jumping forward and you leave your feet, you know, you're at the mercy of the offensive players. So for a pump fake or recoil or reload or whatever, so that's in our game, Roscoe, it's probably the toughest call to make. And, you know, the one thing you ask for from officials is just be consistent from the first time it happens in the game to the end. And that way you know how to defend, you know how to play it offensively. Is consistency, and I think that's one thing the officials always try to do is be consistent with it. You know, and again, it's a hard, one of the hardest plays, along with the block charge in our game to officiate.
And I think the way Harden plays makes it even more difficult.
Right. Well, and even with he and Steph Curry, as far as they are out on the floor, they're way out toward half court line, so that even exasperates you too, because now it's not or just in the paint or in the at the three. They're 30 feet, 27 feet away, you know, taking shots, and so you know your sight line as official is expanded a little bit more. And again, the argument of having four officials versus three has always been there, but I don't think that'll happen. But you know, it is a very difficult play. And to officiate, and I think as the games go on, I think you'll see it officiated more consistently the more officials see it, and they'll study film. They'll go back after the game. They'll talk to the league office who's watching the games, and they'll get better at officiating those plays.
Well, does it mystify you at all about how well Damian Lillard plays? Or I mean, you guys who are in the league know what kind of guy he is, but it seems like the world is just discovering him when he hits this one incredible shot to end the Thunder series. But could you talk a little bit about what you've seen of him over the years?
Well, Damian, I've known him since a young kid from Oakland, and you know, I remember Gary Payton talking about him and bragging about him and being excited about him. Another example of a young man working his behind off to be who he is. I guarantee you, every team that's played against him knows who he is and what he does and his reigns. I knew there was one statistic at one time that he had made more, you know, 30-foot or 27-foot shots than anybody in the league or whatever it was, and at a high clip, at a high percentage. So, you know, everyone, we played him out in Portland. We beat him at our place. But it's one of those guys that his range is uncanny, and he's got the strength to do it. He's worked on it. And he's shooting shots, and that's become the kind of the norm of where our game has gone to. So it's something that's amazing with him. But he's one of the better shooting guards in our league. And like I said, his range is off the charts. I mean, he walks across half court, and he's almost in his range. So the pickup point with him defensively, you got to be on your P's and Q's to get out there and be ready to guard him way away from the basket, and because he is. But again, you know, he's no secret. If anybody's just now seeing him, they've missed a lot of good basketball.
Well, you know, the way that you know, guys are shooting from distance now so regularly. What has been the impact on the game, and is that a good thing, bad thing, or just what?
From a fan standpoint, Roscoe, it's great for the league. It's exciting. When you're down, you're never totally out of a game because of the three-point line, the three-point shot, the depth of the threes. The guys can shoot the ball now. So it's exciting from a fan. And it took me a while to understand the analytical shots and the you know, for me, 2 points is 2 points. But, you know, in the new NBA and the new game, there's bad shots and there's good 2 point shots. So, you know, understanding that and making sure you structure your offense around that and structure your defense how to stop it and force teams to take bad twos and tough twos and, you know, non-paint twos and that type of thing is what you really strive to do defensively. So the game has really evolved and changed over the last, I would say, 6 or 7 years to make sure you better be, you know, have your defense structured and your scheme structured to get guys to play inside. I was watching Utah play against Harden. They were almost practically playing behind him, you know, forcing him into the inside the three-point line and making sure he shot inside the three or took him to Gobert at the rim. So their defense, they really took it to another level in how to guard Harden and that type of thing. And Rubio was really disciplined in doing that. So the game has changed so much, Roscoe, and I think it's for the better. It's exciting. Sometimes you pull your hair out as a coach, some of the shots, some of the three-point shots you guys take, and, you know, you kind of scratch your head. But you never – once your shooters are making shots and taking shots you know they've worked on and dedicated their workouts to, you know, you get more comfortable with it. I've had to get more comfortable with it over the last 3 or 4 years. And I know last year our offense was number 2 in the NBA in Toronto, and we're trying to – we're doing the exact same thing I did for the last few years in Toronto. So we want to make sure we utilize the three-point shot, get to the rim, get to the free throw line, and make sure our shots, our offense is efficient. And on the other hand, defensively, we want you to take non-paint twos and not get to the rim and do all that without fouling.
Well, you're talking about pulling your hair out. The first thing came to mind was You're sitting out there watching Blake take a bunch of threes, but you have him taking threes. I think Boston wanted Antetokounmpo to take his threes, and he hit seven of them last night.
Right.
You see
right.
Al Horford popping out for threes. I mean, if you're a coach sitting out there, you're going, that's not where you want those guys to play, but it does open up things for everybody else, right?
No question. Well, Boston averaged 117 points a game. You know, and to show you how the league has changed, a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, everybody was going crazy about how Golden State was playing. Well, guess what? Their 3-point attempts or their percentage is sort of the middle of the pack this year. Whereas, you know, teams like Milwaukee, Houston, they're still up at the top, and teams are averaging 40 threes per game. And so the game is going crazy. And like you said, you had Lopez who – was you know, kind of gone for dead, and now he's one of the best 3-point shooting bigs in the league. You had Antetokounmpo shooting threes, Horford coming down shooting threes. So the game has changed. And this year we started out Andre Drummond. You know, he could take a three if teams just totally step back and disrespect it. Really wasn't ready for it. I think he's another year or two away from really utilizing the 3-point line. And people don't understand that for our team in the last 5 minutes in crunch time, Andre Drummond was one of our better percentage-wise free-throw shooters. So his shooting touch is there. It's just going to take him a little longer to get there. But that is the way the game is going. And as a coach and as an organization, we're trying to just stay ahead of the curve and you know, stay in the 2019 and 2020 NBA you know, thought process.
We're talking about your young guys, Luke Kennard. How good can he be, and where do you see him fitting in?
I didn't know a lot about Luke. I, you know, knew him just from coaching against him last year as a rookie. Got to know him this summer in his workouts, but still didn't know what he could do under pressure. He missed most of last summer because he had a kneecap problem that he hurt his knee last summer, so he couldn't do anything, couldn't play in summer league. So I didn't get to really coach him and touch him until really training camp, and he was limited in training camp. So the first part of the season was his training camp, the first few games, and so it was tough. I mean, he got off to a tough start, and then lo and behold, he plays a few games and he hurts his shoulder, so he's out another 3 or 4 weeks. So he had a rough start for the season, but as the year went on, Roscoe, his game improved. He grew leaps and bounds as far as his defense was concerned, his toughness, his conditioning. So I think for him, he can be, you know, like a Chris Mullin type, you know, or I challenge him to be like Manu Ginobili, you know, a guy that's really, I told him he's got to get in great basketball condition. He's one of our better 3-point shooters. He's one of our better pick and roll players on our team as far as handling the ball and pick and rolls and that type of thing. So, and I laugh because people force him to his left, but he does everything right-handed. I mean, he can go to his right as well as he goes to his left. So it's just watching him grow, watching him work, and it's going to be, you know, exciting for myself and our coaching staff to work with him this summer and make sure he takes that next step going into year three.
And you were talking about big men, you know, being able to shoot. Jokic with Denver, he's an emerging star. He can do a lot of things with the triple-double.
No, with him, Roscoe, he is an excellent passer. Here's a guy who not only is 7 foot but and can shoot the three with range, but he probably loves passing the ball as much as any of his guards do. So he gives them a distinct advantage. Because one, as an opposing center, you got to be up and around him to, you know, to guard him for the three ball. But then now you come up, opens up all that space for the cutters, the 3-point shooters, and he's a good on-time, on-target passer. So he is a secret weapon. And if you remember, that organization was trying to make a choice between Nurkic and him. And both guys went to excellent teams, excellent programs. Nurkic has gone on to Portland and become an excellent player, and Jokic has gone to be an all-star in Denver.
Well, he kind of, when it comes to passing, reminds me of Sabonis with his passing from the
No question. People, young people don't remember how good Sabonis was as a passer. I mean, he could see the floor and no-look passes, and he is a lot like Jokic is a lot like him when it comes to passing the ball. And I don't know if Sabonis had the three-point shooting range that Jokic has, but he had everything else, and we saw the tail end of Sabonis because, you know,
right.
the years he played over in Europe.
Right. But he was a talent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you were talking about young guys in the league, and I know that there's a debate on two of them for Rookie of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
You got Doncic and Trae Young in Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
and you've seen
mm-hmm.
them both. And
mm-hmm.
I think I was at the game where Trae beat you guys in the last-minute shot. I'm not sure if that was the case or not.
Mm-hmm.
But watching those two guys play,
mm-hmm.
who would you see had the better Rookie Year? Or is the right, you know, could you see on the long haul being a better NBA player?
Well, I tell you, it's tough because they're two totally different type of players, and both teams were in the developmental mode as far as their team is concerned. Doncic is a talent. He's big. He's a big guard who sees the floor, can pass the ball, can shoot the three, who plays with a flair and plays with joy. I enjoy watching him play just because of the joy and the spirit he plays with. You know, he loves passing the ball. He loves kicking your butt with the pass. And so I enjoy him. Where Trae Young, I thought he came on as the year went on. I thought he struggled early in the season. He had to get used to the size and speed of the NBA. But once he did, he started shooting the ball very, very well. And he did a good job of playing. Later in the year. So I thought Doncic, you know, started out the year strong, and I thought they kind of tapered off his minutes as the year went on. But, I would say Doncic had the better overall year just from a overall standpoint of affecting the game. And again, I'm not taking anything away from Trae Young because he was dominant with his three-point shooting, and you're talking about range. His range was deep. And he has a flair for passing the ball. So, but I would just say Doncic in Dallas, he started out the year strong, and I think until they started cutting back on his minutes, he ended up strong. So, overall year, I thought Doncic had a better year.
Well, we had two of the all-time greats to retire this year in Dwayne Wade and Dirk Nowitzki.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of talk about their careers and their impact on the league.
Well, in coaching Dirk Roscoe in Dallas and working with him every day and getting to know him and how great a teammate, how great it was to coach him and work with him and be around him, the game should take notes. Young players should take note of Dirk Nowitzki. You know, he has a move named after him now. You see Durant using it. You see a lot of players using his move. Porzingis uses it. It's funny that he's now down in Dallas, and he uses that one-legged step back, and nobody can get to it. He's so big and long, you'll never get to his move. But Dirk is probably one of the hardest workers I've ever been around. You know, it was almost like we had to keep him out of the gym to save him for the games because he'd go back at night and shoot and get his shots up, and he'd do all these calisthenics and all these different workouts with his, you know, standing on his head, doing his strides down the length of the floor and, you know, striding across the free throw lane and doing one-legged shots and just as his workouts. So then he wins a championship. So I remember when he first come in, I asked Detlef Schrempf, I said, what about this skinny kid? Because I had Detlef in Seattle. I said, what about this skinny kid from Germany? Is he going to be in? I don't know. He might be. I don't know what he – but lo and behold, 21 years later, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer and one of the best three-point shooting bigs, and he started all that stuff with the big shooting the ball. So, but just a joy to be around not only a great basketball person, but a great person, great human being, great father. So the game will miss him, and I'm glad to see him going to stay around Dallas and work with them. And then Dwayne Wade, the same with him. I remember bringing him in for a draft workout in Seattle, and probably the most impressive individual interview that I've ever been around as far as a young player, because one thing we did, we made players break down film. And he broke the film down like an NBA coach. He knew pick and roll coverages, terminology, just the whole nine yards. So he was mature beyond his years coming in for, as a rookie from Marquette. So, and then to go on and see his career, and we were fortunate enough to play him in the playoffs and beat Miami in the playoffs to win the championship. So, but he gave so much to the game. Great example for two guards. To be an example for those guys in the league. And so we've lost two great, you know, to retirement, two great players that really made an impact on the NBA in the last 10, 15 years or how many years they played in it.
And one last thing before we let you go.
Okay.
Vinsanity. Vince Carter.
Oh.
Still at it.
I love him. I tell you what, we was on at the All-Star break. Our families were together on vacation at the same spot and spent time talking to him. And I knew him from when he was up in Toronto. We missed each other, but the imprint that he made on the country of Canada, the imprint that he made on the city of Toronto as far as making basketball cool, he did that. I mean, when I first went up there, everybody had hockey goals in the driveway, but still they were wearing Vince Carter jerseys. And, he left. It didn't leave well, you know, when he left Toronto. But still, no one can deny the imprint he made on that organization, the city, the country. He made, like I said, he made basketball cool. He had a flair he played with about him. And he started the interest of basketball in the country of Canada, in the city of Toronto, for that organization to survive and really now thriving. It started with Vince. And again, I hope that, they mend fences and get his jersey up in the rafters there in Toronto, because he deserves it, because he meant more to that city, the fan base. Again, it didn't end the right way, but I remember last year, 2 years ago, I think they did a video tribute to him. And it was, he was crying. The fan, I think that was, hopefully that was the beginning of forgiveness to get him back in good graces with the fan base, because he meant so much to that organization. And like you said, Roscoe, still at it, still contributing. I know we played him. We lost one game to them at our place here in Detroit. And, he had a lot to do with it. He made some tough shots. And he's still doing it and still can do it. And even at his age, he has a lot of knowledge about the game. You talk about helping young guys. You know, if they just sit and talk to a guy like Vince, they can get a lot of knowledge from him, and he can help their careers get a good jump start.
My lasting memory of Vince mm-hmm. is him standing flat-footed under the mm-hmm. backboard mm-hmm. and jumping straight up and putting his hand above the square.
He's a leaper. No question, Roscoe. He's a gifted athlete. I think he probably could do that every jump now, but probably at his age now, he'd probably do it once a week or maybe twice a week. But I tell you what, he had a flair about him, and at his age, he still has the range to shoot the long threes, and just his knowledge and toughness. And his basketball IQ he brings to the table, he still has that and still does that. And if you can imagine he and Tracy McGrady on the same team there in Toronto, and Butch Carter had them, and I thought they had a lot of young talent there, and it just, just couldn't keep them there. But, but he and Tracy, but mainly Vince, started what they're going through now, the evolution of basketball with their program, and that was the difference between Vancouver making it, not making it, and Toronto making it, was Vince Carter.
Well, let me ask you this question. You mentioned that and difficulty mm-hmm. in keeping them both there. How mm-hmm. difficult is it to keep talent in Toronto? I know it was a lot made of mm-hmm. DeMar DeRozan mm-hmm. not leaving as a free agent, but how tough is it to keep?
Well, first of all, Toronto is probably a premier city in the world. I mean, it has everything, Roscoe. You got diversity. You have everything you want in a city, And again, for young players, the one thing we were always trying to preach there was the fact that, hey, it's an NBA city, But you know, it is a different country. You have to go through customs and all that stuff to get in and out. The tax structure is real. You know, I think it's 54% taxes. So that is very real. So it's different from that standpoint. But if you're a mature young man and you it's an NBA city, it's a great organization, great ownership, you know, you can handle it. But some players just can't handle it, especially if they're young and used to everything in the United States. And you know, and it takes them a little while to get used to it. And that's why it was special for DeMar DeRozan to commit to that organization, to the country, to the people, and adopt the country of Canada, their ways and their thought process and that type of thing. So that was special because nobody up to that point had re-upped at that point. I think Cal did it after DeMar did it. And so they were special. Both those young men were special and the only ones to really do it. So it's a different country, but again, from me, from my family, and me living there, it was easy. It was great for my kids, but again, for young players, it's a challenge. It's a challenge to go there and adopt that as home, being in a different country, different money, different loonies and toonies, and different things as far as the money is concerned, and the tax structure. So it's a challenge. And you know, they do a good job of trying to educate players and keep them there, make them feel at home. And some guys they do and some guys they don't.
Right. Well, Dwayne, we certainly appreciate you coming on, man, and all the best to you. And, again, congratulations on an outstanding job with the Pistons and
thank you.
Continued success.
I appreciate that, Roscoe. We're excited.
Thank you, sir.
We're excited and we got some great players still involved with us, with Isaiah and Rick Mahorn and all the players that come back. And, you know, Rip Hamilton was back, and Ben Wallace is around all the time. He works with our G League team and keep him involved. And so all those things together, we're going to get it back to the glory days. And I don't know when, how, or what, but we're going to get it done because we have a great owner in Tom Gores. And hey, you know, he's putting his money within the program. We just got to make good decisions and get the right pieces around Blake and Andre and Luke and the young guys and make sure we get the ship ashore.
Is Rick Mahorn still issuing punishment?
Rick is a piece of work. I tell you what, he is great. I tell you what, he keeps everything lively. He's around the young players and, you know, he expounds his knowledge to the players, and he's just great for our organization and does a great job with our radio and that type of thing. But if you want Rick's opinion, all you have to do is ask him, and he'll give it to you. He does not pull any bones, Roscoe, as you know.
Right. When you talk to him, tell him I said, what's up?
I'll do that. I'll see him soon. I'll definitely do that.
Okay, Dwayne. Thanks so
okay.
much.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care.
Knowledge on top of knowledge on top of knowledge with Coach Casey.
Yeah, and he is really a class guy, really a class guy.
Absolutely.
In my estimation, got a bad deal in Toronto, but it was good that he landed on his feet in Detroit. And, you know, with Detroit's, you know, legacy and all, I think he'll have them, you know, in the thick of things, and you know, no time short, you know, because he just has so much knowledge of the game and the way he develops players and relates to players. They seem to enjoy, you know, playing for him, and he gets the best out of them. And you know, just look for Detroit in the next couple of 3 years or so to be at the top of the East.
So he has the patience to do what he says he's going to do in terms of developing these guys, and that's the thing, developing them. He's seen it from the collegiate level on up to professional level, and you know, this isn't a quick fix or you having a rush into doing anything. So that's so it's a testament to him and the Pistons organization. Knowing they have a team that's pretty much on the cusp of doing some really special things if they stay healthy. Just like you said, they were in sixth place and could have avoided the Bucks, but then Griffin gets hurt and they dropped to eighth.
Right,
you know, that,
right,
those
right.
are the breaks on that.
Yeah.
Well, we thank Coach Casey for stopping by. And matter of fact, today I saw another guy was in the airport in Atlanta, and I saw Danny Ferry walking through, and I think that he got a raw deal here in Atlanta in terms of just repeating some things and how that went down.
He was
scooped on with New Orleans now, and I think they're gonna benefit from his knowledge. He was a great front office guy.
Well, he interviewed for the Wizards job here. You know, his dad used to run the Bullets, so he interviewed for the Wizards job here, so he could very well land here. You know, he's a local guy. Played at DeMatha, one of the great players at DeMatha. So we'll see how that shakes out if he indeed does get that position. But whoever gets it, they have some heavy lifting to do to get the Wizards. But it's been a while since they've really been, you know, championship contenders. You know, they were a playoff team, and then John Wall went down, and
Dwight Howard.
Right.
What more do you need besides Dwight Howard building a team around that guy, huh?
Well, Dwight Howard is a classic example of how the game has changed. You know, he's the big man, the power player.
He's from the Shaq era of big men.
And the game is not a power game anymore.
No.
It just left him behind. It's too bad because, you know, really, when he was going good, he was really the best big man in the game for a few years there. And, you know, he got the Magic to the finals against the Lakers. The Lakers or was it San Antonio? But anyway, he got the Magic to the finals, and people seem to have forgotten that how good he was at one time. And I still don't think he really scratched the surface
of his potential.
Right, right.
Yeah,
right.
He was right there. We talk about, well, now we want to segue into talking about potential. NFL draft wrapped up over the weekend. Three glorious days in Nashville. Well, I understand there was this terrific crowd out there, better than they've had the successive years, and I think the league has hit on something, moving the draft around to these different cities. Next year, it's going to be in Las Vegas. But we had some really, you know, these outstanding draft picks. As predicted by our two NFL guys in the previous weeks, Arizona made Kyler Murray the number one guy. And so, you know, they got the quarterback that they want, and it seems like they spent a lot of time drafting in successive rounds. They drafted receivers because it seems like they're gonna have some fun out there in the desert with Murray and that new Cardinals offense.
Well, can they protect Murray? That's gonna be the question.
Well, you know that. The speed that he has, they won't have to hold too many blocks for too long, you would think. I think they're going to make adjustments for his game as opposed to trying to do whatever standard stuff they were doing before.
But still, you got to block somebody, and they had probably the worst offensive line in the league last year.
Oh, I beg to differ, my friend.
Well, okay. Okay, I know. All roads lead.
We're not going there.
All roads lead to Atlanta. All roads lead to Atlanta. No matter what the topic. I know.
No, the number two pick, Nick Bosa, goes to the 49ers, and it's he's a talent on the field. He didn't play much last year. I think he had a torn up stomach muscle. But people recognize what an incredible talent he is, but his off the field stuff, you really wonder how that's going to impact that locker room.
His just the locker room and just being in that area, you know, because that's one of the most diverse areas in the nation, and he's going to come in contact with a lot of different people, people that he has sort of disparaged and his political beliefs run counter to a lot of those people's political beliefs. So he's going to be in for an awakening, I believe. And it'll be interesting to see how he just makes that that entire adjustment to living in the Bay Area.
He's going to have to set the world on fire. That's what's going to have to happen for him. Let me get with the new quarterback for the New York Giants, Daniel Jones, I believe is what it is. For some reason, the one we have here has Oakland at 6. That was actually the New York Giants at 6, who took Jones, and everybody thought that they should have gone and gotten Dwayne Haskins. And Gettleman has been on a media blitz over the past couple of days trying to justify why he chose Jones over Haskins. So it seems like this guy, and they're in the same division. Haskins is gonna have two chances a year to put it in the Giants' face.
Well, my thinking here is that choice came down to one thing: the Manning brothers and David Cutcliffe.
True.
I think that was the common denominator there. That he knows the kind of training and background that Jones came from with Cutcliffe, the kind of training that he received because of what he did with Peyton and Eli. So I think that he felt comfortable taking him in that, and now you don't forget now that how many games has Haskins played?
I think the same amount as Jones.
14 games.
Yeah, 14 games as a starter.
And 14 games as a starter. So who has a better reputation for developing quarterbacks?
You go with Cutcliffe.
Yeah. So that's the way that I see that call having been made. And just the fact of the matter is the draft is not an exact science.
They've proven that over the years with a lot of these first round busts
and
third and fourth round stars.
A lot of guys are gonna miss, gonna be busts. A lot of guys.
Well, you see people, a lot of folks got what they needed in their positions, which is really, you hit on something. That Oakland had three picks. They say they got who they wanted. They got a defensive player that was up there, number one up there, and they got help in other areas where they needed him as well. When they got Josh Jacobs of Alabama, who I think was a sleeper running back. I thought he was the best back in America last year. And I want to see what he does up there on the next level, given there with the Raiders. That's going to be something to watch out for.
But, the truth of the matter is not any of these guys has played a single minute in the NFL. And, I remember you and I having a conversation about Bo Scarborough, the other Alabama back, that we both thought would light it up.
Oh, I thought he was. I thought he looked magnificent at Alabama.
Right, right.
But has Alabama had a back to do anything except for maybe Mark Ingram of late?
Well, your boy, he's an Alabama back at heart. Kamara, who transferred to Tennessee.
That's true. Kamara is the exception on that for sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess we could chop up the draft at another time when we get the opportunity. But we want to really, again, thank Dwayne Casey, coach of the Detroit Pistons, for being with us tonight as our guest. He gave us a great insight into the NBA playoffs. And I guess in about a couple of seconds, we're going to have game two of the Denver-Portland series, and we'll be glued to the sets to that tonight because it starts an hour and a half earlier than most of those games out there on the West Coast. So we look forward to that.
My prediction is Damian Lillard will make a 94-foot shot.
If that happens, I'm going to start having you buy my lottery tickets. But on that note, we will look for you guys next time. Thank you for being with us, and we look forward to you next time on
Express Yourself.
You don't never need help from no one.